blood and thunder and going in for tackles that you wouldn't normally go in for.
I try and like want to go in, like my wife's English, the kids are having, but I just can't.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
Let's go back to the football. Andy Mitten is with us. Andy, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay, thanks. Hope you are too.
Yeah. How's your tournament been so far? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Busy. I'm in Amsterdam at the moment and I've been on the road for 10 days and I think I've been to 5 different cities. This is the first day when it's not been bright sunshine. London was glorious. And then I've been in Munich, Copenhagen, which was incredible. Seville. And now I'm here in Amsterdam ahead of Holland against North Macedonia. And it's raining. But I didn't repeat the mistake I made in Euro 2016 and only take T-shirts and shorts. I thought there's a fair chance that we're going to have a couple of bad days. I've really enjoyed it. It's very complicated travelling. But that's sort of become my norm now. I'm having COVID tests most days. Copenhagen was really alive, and that's probably been my favourite place so far, partly because the stadium was full. There was a lot of emotion because of what had happened to Christian Eriksen. It was a really good game between Denmark and Belgium. Munich was good as well. That pass from Paul Pogba was probably the best individual moment that I saw. And I'm travelling on. I'm in London tomorrow. I'm back in Seville on Wednesday. I'll be going to Baku and then back in London for the final. Well, it'll be 31 days away in total. So it is really full on. And I realise I'm very lucky to do this and to be paid for this and to do it as a job. But you've got to look after yourself as well. You can't be going out drinking each night. You've got to, you know, eat well, try and sleep well, because when you're coming through airports, you're having to present 4, 5, 6 different pieces of documentation and compared to normal. And miss one and you don't get on the flight. I've seen people missing flights basically on every single flight I've been on.
Right. And is that they're missing flights because they don't have the right COVID documentation? They haven't done a test or something like that?
Yeah. Or each country has got different rules. So to get into Holland, you need a PCR test. To get into the UK, you need an antigen test. And it's complicated, and I travel a lot, you know. I do it for my job all the time, and it's still very complicated. The idea of trying to do it with a family would just be, it just wouldn't be possible. And they're checking all the documentation, which is quite right that they should be doing that. I did laugh when the border official in Bavaria looked at my accreditation picture, which had been taken having queued in the sun in London the previous day. And I had a really red face and he just laughed at me and went, come on. And I thought, I like this. Getting a bit of abuse off a German border official. But it is complicated. And then each country's got the different nuances. In Bavaria, they were chasing me up. You've not done your COVID test today. Where is it? In Spain was the most difficult country to get in. If you were British up until March, now it's the easiest one to get in. But it depends where you're coming from. If you go from Holland, you need a test. If you go from England, you don't need a test. So you've really got to be on top of it. And it's not like you just get an instruction saying Munich PCR test. You get sent a link and you get sent down this rabbit hole and you end up reading 3,000 words and you come out of it thinking, I'm not sure what's required here. And it's just really complicated. But that has become my norm now. So I know that when I finish this call, I've got to fill in a load of forms to get back into the UK tomorrow. I've got to get another COVID test outside the stadium today in Holland. And in between all that, I've got to do my job as a journalist. I've got to hit the streets. I've got to speak to people. I've got to interview people. I've got to go to the matches. And so I'm not getting a minute, but it's a buzz as well. The atmosphere has been really good in most of the cities. And the cities I've mentioned, they're among the finest in Europe. I'm pretty saddened that I'm not going to Dublin because I'd booked to go to Dublin, I'd booked my hotels in Dublin and Bilbao, and those were the two cities which pulled out. And that's pretty sad because, you know, I like both of those cities as well.
We're pretty sad, especially the way things have worked out. We more than likely, everything would have been fine. We would have been able to have spectators. And we're picking at a scab here that hasn't quite healed on our side. Just last question on this before we get into some of the football. Huge criticism of Platini when the idea was floated in many places. And I did not think it was a good idea at the time. And now that it's happened, I'm like, this is a great idea. Can we do this forever? What's your take, having actually seen the impact that it is having a pan-European championships?
Well, I didn't like the idea at first. I like being in a country when tournament fever takes over. And I'm only really, I'm a football fan at heart, but I'm only seeing it as a paid journalist. It's costing someone a lot of money to send me to all of these different countries. And I always have sympathy with fans with things like ticket prices. The ticket prices are really high. I met Spain fans the other day. They're paying 120, 140, 170 to watch that as well. The game wasn't even a good game. But I can see some merit in Denmark being at home, in Spain being at home, in Holland being at home, in England being at home. You can see, I'm not sure how it all connects up or how all these dots connect, but individually, the cities have been good. And you do sense, I wouldn't say a fever because we're coming out of a hibernation, but I've really been cheered just seeing people enjoy themselves, just hearing humans sing, just seeing football fans going up to a group of French fans outside the town hall in Munich and saying, your national anthem's not a bad one. And them saying to me, do you want me to sing it? And they all start singing it. And I live for their moments, those interactions with fans. I like getting down on the streets and speaking to people. And my experiences have been really positive so far. I'm not sure how I'm going to fare today because it's raining really hard in Amsterdam, but I've had a good run so far.
We talked a little bit about Spain at the weekend. You mentioned the fact that the fans who paid those extraordinary prices have been served up a fairly poor fare so far. What's going wrong with Spain at the moment?
With Spain, you've got a manager who's putting a lot of young players through. The team are in transition. They are not the vintage Spain of 08, of being world champions in 2010, European champions 2012. Luis Enrique, I think he's a great manager and I think he's a very interesting person. And I've been one of the very few journalists who's interviewed him at his home in depth. He's absolutely fascinating. This is a man who, when he stopped playing, travelled around Europe with a hood up watching derby games by himself because he wanted to experience what it was like to stand on the Kop at Liverpool, for example. But he's getting a bit of criticism because Spain are not beating pretty average international teams. The strikers have been struggling. Alvaro Morata, he scored at the weekend and he was supported, but he wasn't supported in the previous game against Sweden. Once again, Spain had 81% possession, but they're not scoring. 0-0, 1-1. And it's becoming a burden. It's becoming a struggle. They've got individually very, very good players. Pedri's 18. He's a fantastic player, but Spain are not breaking teams down and a sense of frustration. Second half against Poland on Saturday, everything was going out to the wings. It was their version of Route 1. They thought, what we're doing is not working. And they don't have the great strikers like David Villa, Fernando Torres, but Gerard Moreno's had a great season. I'm not going to remind myself of him scoring in the Europa League final against Manchester United, but he's a top striker. And Spain haven't always been about absolute number nines anyway. They don't have Iniesta anymore. They don't have Xavi. No one in Spain expects them to get to the semi-final. Maybe not even the quarter-finals. But the way it's looking at the moment, Spain have got their own final against Slovakia on Wednesday, and they've got to win that to have a proper chance of going through.
Yeah, it seems that even when Alvaro Morata scores, that he is often the fall guy for a performance anyway. The penalty debacle was quite something. Is it just performance anxiety with him at the moment, do you feel, Andy, or do you think that there is just something missing from his performances when he puts on the international jersey?
There's definitely a level of anxiety. He's one of those strikers, and I've spoke to players who've played with him. Someone who played with him in Turin said he needs to feel loved, he needs to feel confidence. And I can remember Morata coming through for Real Madrid's B team and watching him against Barca's B team 11 years ago, and he was the next big thing. But even then, people were saying, is he good enough to become the next big thing? Well, he's a top striker, but he's not a top level striker, I don't think, because look at the clubs that he's been at. He's been at quite a lot of clubs already. Would Chelsea fans say that he's been a standout hero for them? Probably not. And for the national team, he is the fall guy. He's the guy who bears the brunt of the whistles, of the criticism. And I don't think that's fair, because it is a collective. And Luis Enrique was strident in his defence of him last week. And I was pleased being in the stadium on Saturday night in Seville. The fans really did get behind Morata. There was definitely a sense of this isn't been fair. And there was a lot of relief when he scored. And he ran straight to Luis Enrique. But then you saw the debacle with the penalty with him and Gerard Moreno. And look, if Spain are not beating Poland and they're not beating Sweden at home, there's going to be criticism. There was also criticism of Luis Enrique because he didn't take the full allocation of players he could have used, 24 instead of 26. He took nobody from Real Madrid. And like it or not, Real Madrid are the biggest team in Spain. And Real Madrid fans like to see their players playing for Spain. And Sergio Ramos's absence looks more telling with each game, because he's just a winner. He's a serial winner. No one in football wins like Sergio Ramos. So Luis Enrique likes to do what he wants to do. He absolutely won't be told to do what to do by the media, but he'll pay for it if Spain don't go through.
Very interesting end to the group season, group series for them. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Pogba issue. You've written extensively for The Athletic about why Pogba's playing better with France. What are your conclusions about what it is? Is it just that the role is more clearly defined, and also he's playing with some better cohort in midfield in particular at France than he is at Manchester United?
Yeah, I wrote that piece on Friday for The Athletic, and I spoke to people who know him very, very well. So they are better qualified to talk than I am. But I can take what their words and I can use them and their information. And there's one of the points is what you touched on. He's playing with better players for France. Another one is that he doesn't feel the pressure for France. He feels the absolute confidence of his manager. That's not to say he doesn't have a good relationship with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at United, because he does. And he just is far more comfortable playing for France. He didn't have a bad season for Manchester United, but he's got this really sort of hot and cold relationship where he can be man of the match and then do something terrible even within the same game. He takes these risks. I spoke to someone at Manchester United about why is he doing better for France than he is for United, and one of the points put back to me was that when he played in Italy, when he plays for France, it's slower, he has more time on the ball. When you're in the Premier League, you've got players straight on top of you from all 19 other teams, whether it's Burnley or Sheffield United, they're straight in your face, and that doesn't help his game. We've seen him have great games for Manchester United, but he just seems to be more confident when playing for France and trying things which come off. And I'm not saying he's been bad for Manchester United, but fans are still divided on Pogba. I'm told that he's amenable to staying. Go back to December, you wouldn't have found many Man United fans who wanted him to stay because of the comments of his agent. So that doesn't help in club football either, whereas he's never going to say, look, I'm going to move him from France to join Luxembourg or to join Spain, because it's international football. So I think it's a combination of smaller factors. And there was another point to me about structure. The structure of Spain, of France, is very defined. Deschamps gave him his debut 8 years ago. Pogba knows exactly what his role is, whereas at Manchester United, he's been moved around quite a lot. During that game in Munich last week, I got a text off one of Pogba's family, and it just said, different animal, as a compliment, because he was playing so well. I don't know whether that meant different animal for France as opposed to Manchester United, but I actually really enjoyed watching him play. I'd like to see him stay at Manchester United. Every United fan would like to see better players around Paul Pogba. But it's also a joy watching him play for France. And yet it's also frustrating because he looks like one of the best players in the world. And that's not always the case for United.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it fixable at United? Could they get this Pogba, this version of Pogba out? Or is the best thing, like the reports this morning are that they're going to, and I don't know how accurate these are, but there is a suggestion, and no doubt it's coming from an agent somewhere, that they're set to make him the highest paid player in English football with a new contract. Is that the right thing to do for Manchester United?
I think United will offer him a new contract. I think United will obviously pay him well. But United are wary because they had the pants pulled down with Alexis Sanchez. They made David De Gea the best paid goalkeeper in the world, and now they're in a situation where United don't want to actively sell him, but even if they wanted to, it will be difficult because he earns so much money. So he'll be well paid at United, and it almost suits United that he hasn't been the absolute standout player, because there's no from Real Madrid or PSG to sign Paul Pogba. So I've been saying since February that he is amenable to stay in, that he's happier playing in a more advanced role, because he likes that advanced role for Manchester United, and got a good relationship with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, as I've said. So I wouldn't be surprised if he signs a contract, and I think United fans would just like to see a bit more consistency. And to be fair, he has had some pretty serious injuries, so if you could have a bit of luck with not getting injured. But it's paradoxical, because on one hand, his shirts sell lots, and on another, the fans still don't have a song for Paul Pogba. There's no evidence on Paul Pogba's Twitter biography that he plays for Manchester United. I think it says he's an athlete for Adidas, something like that. So he's got this relationship where he definitely feels that he gets criticised by the media in England, and part of him, I think, has just given up on, you know, he doesn't want to try and win anyone over. And yet, when he goes away with France, he doesn't feel that he needs to do that. So I think he'll stay at United. I hope he'll stay. A lot of United fans would not agree with me there, but I still think that there's a world-class player there. We'd just like to see it more at Old Trafford.
And the Dutch, finally, Andy, their performances have been a bit better, I think, than a lot of people expected so far. Is that anachronistic? Is it going to continue? What's your take on them?
Who knows with the Dutch? They normally either rip themselves apart internally or win the competition. This is their first tournament in 7 years, if I'm not mistaken. They've won both of the matches. They've been at home. I think it slightly surprised people. Holland produces wonderful players. I wouldn't say the favourites, but that probably suits them. Their group has been quite an easy one. I think there's a sense here from me speaking to people that Memphis Depay needs to raise his game, because he's seen as one of the star players in a young team. They're going to go through. What's going to happen when Holland come up against a Germany or a France, or I was going to say England, but I'm not entirely convinced by England myself. But it's definitely been a slight surprise that they've done okay so far.
All right, Andy, we'll let you go. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Thank you.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.